under the guise of public safety and coronavirus and the new normal, it is an all-out, across-the-board assault on the food system and on your ability to grow food. And as we enter this great reset, and now the great reset of the table, according to the Rockefeller Foundation, this is in fast motion right now, and we all need to start growing our own food. Ladies and gentlemen, according to the Rockefeller Foundation, now is the time to completely transform the food system as we know it around the world, including here in America. That's right. Even as we stare down the face of the most significant disruption to agriculture and to our food supply in modern history, even as we enter a period where we are expecting food scarcity and people to go hungry, for which we should be preparing, what better time than now, according to the Rockefeller Foundation, the people that ruined our food supply in the first place, than to seize the opportunity to come in and make it more sustainable, equitable, and fair and just. That's right. According to their new Reset the Table plan, we should be meeting the moment to transform the U.S. food system. And I'd like to talk about that. I'm Christian, and this is the Ice Age Farmer broadcast. And the Rockefeller Foundation's new report, Reset the Table, talks a lot about all of the new situations that coronavirus has shed a light on, all of these brewing problems that really have now been surfaced by this latest crisis. From the foreword, 14 million children are missing meals on a regular basis. This is worse than the Great Recession, and it's five times worse than before the pandemic. This paper, then, draws directly on the rich discussions to lay out a framework for change towards an equitable, nourishing, and sustainable U.S. food system. The imperative to change the U.S. food system is not new. Many individuals and organizations have been working behind the scenes to address this for years, if not decades. Yeah, this is a long-standing plan that's being implemented now. What is new here, though, is the urgency and the opportunity in this moment to not let a crisis go to waste. We can make transformative progress. One of these things that's a key here is that access to healthy food is a right for all. And this ties into the base universal basic income, UBI. Everyone should be able to earn a living wage. Everyone should have access to healthcare. Everyone should have access to good, nutritive food. And indeed, one of the core things that happens in this report is that food and healthcare, food and medicine, become one. They become one integrated system. Because indeed, as our healthcare system has ignored for the last 100 years, it actually matters what you eat. Nutrition is in fact the primary way that you can keep your body healthy, but we have ignored that for the last 100 years of Rockefeller-based allopathic medicine and disgusting no nutrition farming. And I mean, it is the Rockefellers that have put us into this terrible situation in the first place. And they admit it in this paper later on. Let's go on. So from this intro, with urgency, action, and partnership, we can channel our energy to transform the U.S. food system together. And I at least appreciate that they're quite clear that that's the goal. We're going to transform the food system. We're going to transform what you eat. And because you are what you eat, we're going to transform you. This is all the transhumanist takeover of all of society, including the food system. So let's start out with what they say, these simmering problems that are now boiling over. What are those things? What COVID-19 has revealed this last shocking and heartbreaking few months? Long car lines and for a day's or a week's worth of food, the food banks being struggled. I've covered a lot of these issues that they're now highlighting here. But they also point out, though, that 94% of deaths from COVID-19 have an underlying condition. The majority of those underlying conditions are diet-related. So now we see again, just like Boris Johnson said, I'm too fat, and that's why I'm passing these obesity restrictions, and you can't advertise burgers during the day anymore, because we don't want kids to see your ads and get fat. Obesity is why I got sick. Yes, they are linking. This is all part of linking food and health. And thus, when you say now that the we're living in a medical tyranny, now it becomes a food tyranny as well. That's the bottom line here. All right. They tell an equally powerful story of a food system struggling to respond to the disruptions wrought by COVID-19. Yes, it's been a very troubling time. The system has been stretched to its limits, and here's where the Rockefeller Foundation actually tells the truth. They actually take credit, to my surprise, for having destroyed the food system. The food system's evolution had consequences. The Green Revolution, which the Rockefeller Foundation played a role in seeding and scaling, was effective and successful in addressing calorie-based hunger and averting mass starvation. But it leaves a legacy that we can clearly see today, including an overemphasis of staple grains at the expense of more nutrient-rich foods, a reliance on chemical fertilizers that deplete the soil, and overuse of water. All of which is true. The U.S. food system's very specific kind of efficiency has also brought rigidity and costly impacts on human and environmental health worldwide. Yeah, that's absolutely true. But it was the Rockefeller Foundation that did all that. So why should we listen to them now? Shouldn't we instead turn back to indigenous practices that have always worked, right? To the regenerative practices that could actually undo and repair some of the damage that's been wrought by the Rockefeller Foundation's terrible toxic petrochemical agriculture. No, we're going to fail forward. We're going to embrace even more of the Rockefeller Foundation's recommendations, particularly given that they flow from the UN and this globalist transhumanist takeover. We'll continue reading from their framing of these problems here. This is the problem part of the problem-reaction-solution Hegelian dialectic, even just within this paper. Back to the obesity. 71% of today's adults cannot qualify for military service in the U.S., with overweight and obesity being the main drivers of disqualification. I didn't know that. It's pretty wild. The DoD spends $100 million plus on lost work days associated with active duty personnel who are overweight or obese, right? So we're just saying, you guys are all fat, you can't handle it, we need to make better choices for you. It's food tyranny. It can't be any more clear. Farming is also responsible for widespread deforestation, loss of biodiversity, which we've seen is also being tied to the pandemic. They're blaming the loss of wildlands, and they're saying we need to rewild a lot of farms, and we need to push people back into the cities so that we can give this back to nature, and that will end pandemics. And then, of course, greenhouse gas emissions. So long before COVID-19, also, farm and meatpacking laborers were already badly treated, and during the pandemic, it's been a terrible abuse. They were classified as essential. They were forced to work against their will, unprotected, etc. Even grocery clerks and stockers have been similarly on the front lines of COVID-19, migrant workers, all of these people involved in keeping you fed. We need to protect them. Enter the opportunity. And now they really make that link between health and medicine. Again, having ignored nutrition completely in our medical system for hundreds of years now we're actually going to make that. Oh, it looks like it actually matters what you eat. Before the pandemic, healthcare was experimenting with how to offer nutrition services, but now we will embrace it. That is part of the fundamental change that's needed as we extend our medical tyranny to be a food tyranny too. Welcome to the food world order. Here now is the fundamental change that is needed in the U.S. food system. Based on dialogues with over 100 experts and practitioners, who I will come back to soon to explore just who are the authors of this totalitarian agenda, this paper integrates the insights, analysis, experience, and efforts of a large array of organizations that have long been working to improve our food system. Their recommendations are as follows. 1, food should be a right. Nutritive, good nutritive food should be a right. Like I said, this is the UBI. This is the, literally, we're getting, in fact, they're quite clear. We're getting rid of the capitalism here. Never mind shareholder returns. Never mind working for your living. It's a basic right that you have income and good food. And we're not going to even try and maximize shareholder value now. It's now an equitable system focused on fair returns to all stakeholders, building equitable prosperity throughout the supply chain. Again, it sounds good. It's kind of hard to know what that means and be critical of it, but we'll leave it there. And then the other thing here that they call out is we can't do this thing where we grow all of our food in one place and then ship it to the rest of the world. We need local and regional supply chains that will contribute here, which is actually sounds like a good idea too. To realize these changes, we need to apply several approaches here. First of all, we need to apply true cost accounting, which already sounds a bit Orwellian to me, right? True cost accounting says that you don't just take into consideration costs. You go further than that. You go to extended and indirect costs, the externalities that are affecting the rest of the world. Now, this is just like when we've looked at Christine Lagarde and the European Central Bank saying, well, we're not going to lend to anyone that deals with oil because they have such a huge true cost of operations. They're actually destroying our environment completely. And so we're just going to cut off all funding from them. So this is as I called it then, we're not even going to look at real dollars now. We're going to consider your CO2 emissions and other unicorn farts, cow farts, and that is true cost accounting. We're going to call it whatever we want. The problem with true cost accounting is that the true externalities are subjective. Anyone can make up that that you doing business affects me negatively, and therefore we should consider your operation to actually be not profitable because I say so, because I say you're making my quality of life poorer, because I say you're emitting cow farts or CO2, which according to me is a big problem. Maybe you disagree. It doesn't matter now because we've got global governance and they're telling us that these are the true costs. So there's just one way that they can do whatever they want by saying that the true cost of your operation, which is a subjective thing. Ensure public purchasing generates more public good out of every dollar spent on food. This is where they make the case that EBT, SNAP benefits, food stamps, basically, are actually a good thing because there's a multiplier. So even though we're giving away money, when they spend it on food, it has a multiplied effect on the economy. It's kind of a weird argument. And then I wanted to point this out. We need to invest in coordinated federal, state, local capabilities and emergency response plans to increase the flexibility and resilience of the food system. And similarly, modernize data and technology platforms. Why? To be able to operate the system more efficiently, both in normal operation and under stress. What do they mean under stress? And emergency response. It seems like they are announcing that there will be additional turbulence ahead, that this was not the only supply chain interruption that we can expect. And indeed, we already, here at the Ice Age Farmer Channel, we already know that more are planned, more are in the works, more are already happening right now. So this is just languaging that differently. And then, of course, data and technology platforms, like the UK paper that we saw where they said, we need more data, we need more automation. It's the same thing. We're going to collect all this data. We're going to feed it into the AI, as I've been covering. We'll go on for now. And then finally, again, unify actors across multiple sectors. Now that we have linked healthcare and nutrition and food and agriculture and everything together, it's all the same. It's all ours to control with our centralized control systems, right? Which is what a coordinated federal response team, we'll read about this more below. We're going to centralize control and we're going to take control centrally over it all. That's what these 2 points combined mean. Now, there's great urgency here they establish due to the apparent extreme weather events that are taking place because of climate change. Of course, that would be the grand solar minimum. But now that we have this opportunity to put in more investment into the economy since the Great Depression, well, as Jay Inslee said, we want to make sure that we do a good job of routing that investment towards the Green New Deal, the Green New Coronavirus Recovery Deal, the Green Rebuild of the transformation of our food system. Success will require numerous changes to policies. We're going to have to change the law to do what we want. And we're going to transform the food system. We're going to have to transform both the policies and the practices. Yeah, you'll be doing different things. You'll be growing food in different ways. And the norms. Yeah, you'll be eating different foods. You'll be drinking different drinks. Over the next few months, we will continue to engage. Yeah. Of course they will. All right, so what are these three core shifts that they've just outlined above? Number one, create an integrated nutrition security system. As I said, this is guaranteeing universal basic nutrition is another way to say this. So they're going to focus on the EBT, the SNAP benefits, the food stamps, as I mentioned. But they also say, and they clarify that this has to be accessible using the new contact-free food acquisition. So I've talked about how people within Walmart, Whole Foods, Safeway, Kroger, these big retailers have reached out to me and let me know over the past few months that the big push coming from the top is to move to online ordering, curbside pickup, contactless shopping experiences. And so what they suggest here is that this has to be compatible with food stamps. And then this is an interesting one. School food programs need to be seen as anchors of community feeding. And then number three, food is medicine. Expand that notion that food is medicine. Quote, dietary health and COVID-19 outcomes are clearly linked, because if you're fat, like Boris Johnson, you might die. And now is the time to rapidly expand equitable access to produce prescription programs, medically tailored meals, and other programs that enable healthcare providers to connect patients with healthy food. I want to pause here for a moment to recall that that we talked about this yesterday when I mentioned that they're working on a tomato that would be an edible coronavirus vaccine. This notion that we can use genetic modifying GMO crops as biofarming, molecular farming, or just straight up farming, they call it here, to create medicines within them, to actually synthesize medicine within the food once you've modified the gene. Here's a bit about how they're modifying a tobacco-like plant to create virus-like entities within tobacco, which then you grind up and ingest, and lo and behold, you become immune to a coronavirus. It's just insane. But this is the kind of thing they're talking about when they say food as medicine. It's not healthy food, Hippocrates style. It's literally genetically modified food that is being changed so that it changes you, so that it affects your body and starts eliciting the changes that they want in you. This concept of food is medicine is really interesting, and it's an important thing to call out from this document. Here they say, quote, one of COVID-19's legacies should be that it was the moment Americans realized the need to treat nutritious food as part of healthcare, both for its role in prevention and in treatment of diseases. By integrating healthy food into the healthcare system, doctors could prescribe produce as easily as pharmaceuticals. But again, ladies and gentlemen, they're not just talking about eating healthy food. Here's a bit more. This is, yeah, Boris Johnson literally said, I was fat and that's why I got sick. And now we have to keep you from getting fat so you don't get sick. It's all for your safety. A little bit more on the schools. Public schools are anchors of community feeding. We must recognize school food service as an essential nutrition program. What does that mean? We can't trust parents to feed their kids anymore? We have to have this anchor, and we have to rely on schools to get healthier food into kids' stomachs. This is just another one of those data points along the state taking control over children and removing them from their parents. All right, let's shift number two. We must reinvigorate regional systems as part of a better balanced, more sustainable, and more resilient nationwide food chain. Now we've just put the green mask on full. This is all Agenda 21 sustainability language here. So what does it actually mean? Let's read a little bit more deeply. One of the keys here is that they want to ensure that they provide relief and stimulus packages that account for the disproportionate effects of the vaccine of COVID-19, because apparently Black, Indigenous, and people of color were hit harder by the vaccine by COVID-19. And therefore, Black communities, Indigenous communities, people of color should receive stimulus packages to rebuild agriculture. Am I reading that correctly? Let's double check my math there. Reading down here, achieving this shift, we must expand and ensure equitable participation in food policy collaboratives and other cross-sector bodies that will improve our food system. We should invest in grassroots organizations, many of which are already Black, Indigenous, people of color. Like, wait, are we building a racist food system? Is that what the Rockefellers are telling us to do? I don't really get it. I mean, everyone has to eat. Do we really need to talk about skin color in this equation? Apparently we do. Apparently we want systemic racism in our food system, and we should only fund, I mean, this sounds like South Africa, right? We should only be funding getting rid of the white farmers. Let's just leave that there, because it is definitely a third rail, and I'd rather stay with the big picture here. But it should be a red alert just to even mention anyone's skin color when we're talking about feeding the nation. These two things are not related, ladies and gentlemen. We also need to invest, here's some concrete things though, in hard infrastructure such as regional food hubs, cold chain, mid-scale meat processing facilities, so not the big central meat packing factories, and other distribution factories, facilities. Let's move on. Number three, the shift to invest in equity and shared prosperity. This talks about how, again, we need to establish protections for the meat workers and the agricultural laborers. This speaks to the OSHA guidelines, which help to keep social distancing implemented even when you are doing your harvest work, even when you're working in a meatpacking factory. Here's what that looks like. We've seen this before, where OSHA advises that if you're producing food, then this is a bad situation. You need to get those workers out of there. You can't produce food anymore, not under these new guidelines. The good situation here is that you have no one nearby, and yeah, your production is cut actually in half, a little bit less than half, it looks like. Or down here, here's alternatively, you could put a barrier in, but still no workers there, less food coming out of the system. It's pretty clear that OSHA guidelines have a direct correlation to the amount of production coming out of our systems. So this is a real red flag as well. And this document from the Rockefellers goes on to talk about how we must relentlessly apply that fake cost accounting, true cost accounting. We're going to, you know, amplify the cost of the dollar. They go through these public policy guidance for how this should be implemented. Here's again, right now there are more than 15 agencies at the federal level alone who are supposed to regulate and implement policies that impact food from farm to fork. There's that word again. But just as after 9/11, we realized that we needed the Department of Homeland Security, this COVID-19 crisis illustrates a clear need for a single office responsible for our food system. So bring in the centralization of control of power over food. Because if we're building food tyranny to complement our medical tyranny, we got to do it. Capability number four. According to McKinsey, agriculture was the least digitized sector in the United States. We can't have that. We need perfect data from every field, from every seed, and we need that to feed into the AI. I've talked a lot about that before. The shifts outlined in this paper, quote, will all be made possible and strengthened by a comprehensive access to data in real time, even. We want that data in real time, if that wasn't clear. And finally, oops, I missed. And finally, we need to unify diverse actors into a social movement, social engineering. Now is the time to realize the longstanding goal of building a more unified front to amplify our advances to policy. So take animal rebellion and all of these different aspects, all these actors, and bring them together. Catalyze this change. They conclude, quote, over the coming months, the Rockefeller Foundation will engage with leaders in the many intersecting fields the food system touches to strengthen efforts to address the challenges and pursue the opportunities involved in this paper. In other words, we'll be working on this. We're going to be steaming ahead on this agenda to take total control over your food supply. And they absolutely will continue to work on taking total control over the food system. Now, as they see it, is the moment to do so. Now, again, like I said, who is this? Who's talking here? Who wrote this paper? Who are the 100 experts that the Rockefeller Foundation tapped and invited in to come have this conversation? Look at this. It reads like an amazing collection of, here's someone from the National Sustainable Agricultural Commission, someone from the RAND Corporation, someone from the World Food Policy Center at Duke, more sustainable, renewable living, the Harvard Law School Food and Law Policy Clinic, who just this week petitioned the USDA so that fake meat, lab-grown, synthetic, disgusting meat could be sold to you as beef without even labeling it. That's what the Harvard Law School is up to. And yes, they're working on this with the Rockefeller Foundation. Big surprise there. The Food Chain Workers Alliance, so that's why the workers' rights are in there. The Johns Hopkins University Center, a few people, has some of their futurists in there. The UN's World Food Program, this is a collection of globalists and other New World Order stooges. And then also, of course, the Brookings Institutions and the Meridian Institute down here, both think tanks related to these sorts of things. In fact, as I mentioned before, it was the Meridian Institute who's already previously put together reports on climate change and food systems and all the changes we need to make an equitable food system for the future. And it was the Brookings Institute which has been doing the surveys to collect the data that justifies everything that's in this report. We've seen from the EU, just a month ago I covered, they unveiled their farm to fork strategy. What did they talk about? They talked about a fair, healthy, and environmentally friendly food system. Yes, we can leave it up to the unelected bureaucrats in the EU to set this tone for all of the countries in Europe. And indeed, they, just like the Rockefeller Foundation, are both pulling from the IPCC's reports at the UN, talking about how we have to change our use of land and we have to reformat the food system all in the name of climate change. This predates the coronavirus. But I just wanted to point out, in fact, here's another one. I just wanted to illustrate that this isn't coming actually from the Rockefeller Foundation as much as they are the mouthpiece domestically for this global agenda, this template that was rolled out by the UN, by the FAO, and then by the EU, by the UK, by the Rockefellers. It takes different forms in different parts of the world, but we see that where it takes the unelected bureaucrats of the EU and Europe, here it's these indeed unelected ruling class, the think tanks. All of this is to be expected, right? When they have already publicly announced that they want a global system surveilling every emission of gas anywhere on the planet, surveying and identifying every coffee bean that is grown and every piece of fish that is harvested from the sea and put it in blockchain and the Internet of Things and use artificial intelligence to control the supply chain. This has already been announced and it's being implemented rapidly by IBM and a few other actors. And this new startup called FoodID just got a new round of funding. They have executives, as I called out, from a former Facebook and Google employee is their CEO. They have board members who are from Whole Foods. And their whole shtick here is that they want to provide, in their words, transparency and label claim authentication. And thus, when you see, and they're claiming this, people deserve to know what's in their food. When they see the food ID label, it's like the USDA stamp of approval, but now it's food ID. Now it's blockchain, Facebook and Google executives that are doing it. Only, we really don't have any reason to trust these people. Do we? I mean, we just saw that the Harvard Policy for Food and Law was petitioning the USDA to not tell you that it was fake meat, that it wasn't even real meat. They want to totally lie to you. They don't have any interest in telling you what's in there. And that earlier in the summer, of course, the FDA actually said, tell you what, don't worry about your labels. If you need to change your ingredients, that's fine. Just try and swap it out for something that's roughly the same. Just something else that's still got fat or protein. If it's pretty much still the same, you can just do ingredient substitution because of coronavirus, right? We're just throwing all of the rules into the wind. These are the people who are saying we can trust them to verify that our food is coming from the right place, even as they stop doing so, and even as they petition for the ability to lie to us because of free speech protections. It's just insane. No, I don't trust these people. And as I've said before, under the guise of public safety and coronavirus and the new normal, it is an all-out, across-the-board assault on the food system and on your ability to grow food. And as we enter this great reset, and now the great reset of the table, according to the Rockefeller Foundation, I just wanted to point out, using their own fresh, two-day-old report about resetting the table, that this is absolutely going on. It's in fast motion right now, and we all need to start growing our own food. Of course, it is not a surprise that they are putting out this report that paves the way forward into the future, right as we're about to head into severe food shortages, which they will just point at as yet another reason that we need to transform the food system into an equitable, sustainable, just situation. So I hope I've helped to cut through a bit of the language that they use, that green mask, and share with you this latest report. You can find my work on iceagefarmer.com. This report and all my reports are up there. If you value the information that I'm sharing, please support this broadcast. You can find a few ways of doing so at iceagefarmer.com/support. And folks, please spread the word. That is the most important thing we can do right now. Growing food, raising animals, still important, but they're coming for us. And if we don't get the word out and put a stop to it, then there is no future for growing food and raising animals. But I firmly believe that this is very important to spread the word, because if I imagine what it looks like if tomorrow everybody knows what's going on, everybody knows about the Rockefellers who called Chairman Mao's great experiment a success and said this is a model for the rest of the world, who said we want a nation of slaves. The Rockefeller quotes are, you know, this guy is out of his mind. These guys are all crazy. As we can tell, look what they're doing to the food supply. But if we got the word out and if everybody knew about what's going on tomorrow, I have to imagine this whole agenda would come to a screeching halt and we could immediately start building a real future, right? Imagine if all of this energy that was going into crafting a beast system and manifesting a totalitarian slave reality, this is insane. If all of that energy were channeled instead into building a future of true abundance, man, what an awesome future we could build. And so that's why I say it's important to spread the word and to imagine that future instead and to work on building it. Join me in doing that. Thanks for watching, folks. Again, I'm Christian, and this is the Ice Age Farmer channel. Be well.